Hi, I'm Melanie. I'm a compulsive overeater and very grateful to be a member of this group. And just full disclosure, what I work on these days, I am very nervous. I never get nervous when I qualify at meetings, but this meeting matters so much to me. So I am nervous and turning that over and asking my higher power to speak through me and help me to be of service to somebody, particularly the newcomer. So I'll qualify briefly and then tell you what it was like, what happened and what it's like now. So I've been in OA not quite 8 years. My abstinence date is March 23rd of 2021. And I have had a lot of physical recovery, and I'm still working on that part, but I've had a lot of physical recovery. But I've had even more emotional, and the greatest is the spiritual recovery. And that is not something that I ever thought would be part of my life at all. Which sort of explains why life was so difficult until I figured that out. I think I picked up food. I think I started to pick up food for the first time when I was about 8. And at that time, I had a pretty significant thumb sucking habit that I had had until I was 8. And like, you know, any good addict, I did all that in secret. And I thought my parents didn't know that I sucked my thumb, and they knew. And when I was 8, they made me quit. They made me stop sucking my thumb, and pretty draconian methods to get me to stop. But I stopped, and then I picked up food. And we understand it's a progressive disease. And so, you know, I overate some when I was a kid in elementary school, and then it just sort of continued to build, it progressed. The house I grew up in, was chaotic, and, there was a lot of anger. There was a lot of, yelling and shouting and not much physical violence, but a lot of emotional, verbal, psychological violence. You know, though, even despite all that, I knew my parents loved me. I did know that, but I was afraid of them. And I did not feel safe in my house. And I started having panic attacks when I was a kid. I developed insomnia and I remember like trying to explain what I now understand is insomnia and panic attacks. And we're trying to explain that to my parents, and they just, you know, they didn't get it. But again, I get now, you know, when the gifts of this program is that I can accept my parents as they are. And I accept that my parents did the very best that they could with the tools that they had available to them at the time. And so I'm skipping ahead a bit, but that's a huge gift of this program. So I used food. And it just sort of intensified, and I've done all the things with food. I'd go to friends' houses to eat. My parents, I grew up in the 70s and the 80s, and my parents were health food nuts, and they like every trend that came along, they were on it. And so I was on it, and there was, you know, nothing interesting to eat in the house, but I figured out how to overeat nonetheless. And I would go to friends' houses. I would sort of pick whose house am I going to go to so that I can get the best snacks. And when I would babysit, I would steal food. And eventually I went to college and stole roommates' food. You know, you'd eat all the food and then go out and replace it or lie about it. I've done all of it. I've eaten out of the garbage. I've eaten, you know, the frozen food, the burnt food, the food that's almost rotten. I've lied. I've stolen. I've done all of it. And I get to say that to you today without shame, that is my disease. And that is, it's part of my story. And I don't have shame about that anymore. I do tell you, I have to remember that I don't have shame about that anymore. And you guys get that. But every once in a while, my relationship with my mom is developing, and I'm very grateful for that. And I happened to say, so I thought I had this like particularly close moment with her recently. And I happened to share something that I did with food. And she, like, the look on her face was just like, oh yeah, I'm not supposed to tell normies this stuff. And so I won't do that again, or I'll try not to do that again. But what I was doing with food didn't show up on my body until I went to college. And I started driving, and I had, and I was working. And so I had money and independence. And so, you know, I spent a lot of time eating. And what I went to college to do, and I went on a scholarship, it fell apart, because of my eating, and because of what was happening with my body. But really, what was happening, you know, more so I understand now, it was about what was happening on the inside. I was miserable. I was uncomfortable. And I mean, and it was just sort of like all of the time. I was miserable and uncomfortable all of the time. From about the time, honestly, that I picked up food when I was 8, that's when relationships got hard for me. And I didn't know, friends were hard. I mean, parents were sure hard, but friends were really hard too. I didn't get, how do people just like make friends and like find stuff to talk about and be yourself? And I mean, I didn't know how to be myself. I'm still figuring out now, who I am. But I really didn't know who I was. And so I just, particularly as I got into middle school, high school, college, but you know, really even to a few years ago, I was always just trying to be who I thought you wanted me to be. I thought, you know, what can I be so that you'll like me, so that you'll accept me, so that you'll love me? And so I, you know, I was really a chameleon. I really didn't know. Yeah, I really didn't know who I was. And I just didn't know how to, like, not only could I not be present, like, I couldn't be happy. I couldn't be content. I was always like looking for what's the thing that's going to make my life better. And I spent a lot of time in fantasy about what could come and what might be. And so, you know, friendships were hard, relationships were hard. And then I went to high school and discovered dating. And that, for some reason, at first was not hard. And I just, but that, you know, when I have learned in program, I allowed myself to be, or I don't know, that's wrong, whatever. I don't know what the right words are, but I was in a lot of really damaging relationships. I was in a lot of really abusive relationships. I was, again, trying to be somebody that I thought, you know, if I could be this person that you would like me, that you would love me, whatever. And I had, what I did in high school, I started a relationship with somebody in high school that continued into my 20s. And it was a very significant relationship in my life and romantic relationship. And I ended it with him sometime in my 20s, and I really didn't know why. For years, I didn't understand why, because really felt a pretty strong connection with this person. And I now understand, I think, that he was an intense, emotional, vulnerable person, and it scared the hell out of me. And I could not, you know, he wanted me to be intense and vulnerable and emotional, and I couldn't do it. So I eventually just stopped doing it. And then I missed him every day. I married somebody else and I missed him every day. And I wouldn't call him and I wouldn't reach out to him because I was married. And so I'd made a commitment. I wasn't happy, but I'd made a commitment. So that's what I was going to do. And I hated my body and I hated what I looked like. And so I wasn't going to reach out to him. And then, just shy of his 30th birthday, he was drunk and high and ran his car into a telephone pole, and died. And, you know, I now understand that he also was an addict. He had different substance. He chose different substances than I did, but he also was an addict. And when he died, I really thought, well, that's it. You know, if there was any chance, like, because I kept thinking, I'm going to get my stuff together. And then he and I will be together. And so when he died, I thought, yeah, that's it. That's it. Life's just going to suck. And I did for a while. And then I had my son, and that gave me a new thing to focus on outside of myself. And all this time, right? I'm sorry, Sarah, where am I with time?
You're on 10 minutes. You've got 10 minutes left.
Thank you so much. All this time, right? I'm dieting. I'm doing all the diets. Like, I'm doing all the things with food, but I'm also doing all the diets that, I mean, every, like, geez, you know, I could spend an hour telling you about diets and exercise programs and the binging and the restricting and the, like all of it. And I, you know, I'm a great dieter until I'm not. And then, but I'm, you know, but I'm a great dieter, but I'm also miserable while I'm dying, right? Cause I was dieting and I was dying for sure. And then when my son was two, the man I was married to at the time said that he was not in love with me and couldn't be married to me anymore because of my weight. And so he left and I was miserable and suicidal and all of those things. But you know, what kept me on this planet at that time was my son. And so I was sort of just, you know, I put everything into him. I met somebody else eventually, and it's actually the man I'm still married to. And we got married way too fast. That's what I was doing, just trying to find a thing that's gonna make me happy. We got married way too fast, and I wound up with a daughter that I had not planned for. Daughter who was six when I met her. And I'm really, you know, I haven't said anything about this so far, but I've said it in this meeting a lot. I'm arrogant. I am exceedingly arrogant. I am exceedingly controlling. I think I know everything. I think I can solve everyone's problems. And my daughter's biological mom struggled as a parent. And so I thought I was going to step in. I was going to do it all. I was going to be super mom to my son and my now daughter and my husband. And I tried to control the hell out of everybody. And I don't think that our house was as chaotic as the house I grew up in, but it was well on its way to becoming that chaotic because of me wanting everybody to do things exactly the way I wanted them done. And then a few years in, one night my family went out, and as I often did when they went out and I was alone in the house, I started eating.
Eight minutes left.
Thanks, Sarah. I started eating, and I was just, you know, in that miserable, horrible pain that comes with binging. And I picked up the phone and I called the last therapist I had seen, one of many who I had given thousands of dollars to and hundreds of hours and just lied my ass off. And because, again, I was just always like, I just want to be who I think, you know, I want you to see me this way. But unfortunately, I was, you know, I was desperate, and I called, and she got me into OA. She got me into OA, and this is 2015. And so I walked into a room with 20 people, and we all were sitting in a circle, and they figured out I was a newcomer, you know, because they hadn't seen me before. And everybody started going around telling their story, how they got here and what OA had done for them. And I started to cry. And it is a miracle that I stayed in that seat for the whole meeting, because I hate crying. Well, I used to. I don't anymore. Learn to cry in here. I hated crying, and I learned not to cry as a kid. But I sat there. I literally sat on my hands, and I just stayed. And you know, and at the time, I thought I was willing myself to stay. And I now know, right, that was my higher power that got me to stay, to keep my butt in that seat and stay for that meeting. And I can see those people. And I mean, I can see almost all of them in my head. And one person in particular, she said something that was the most confusing, profound, like ridiculous, amazing thing I had ever heard. And she said that food was not her problem, that food was the solution to her problem. And that made no sense to me and made a whole lot of sense to me, right? All at the same time. And so I was in that group for a while, and I just, you know, I was up and down with the abstinence. The group it really was kind of like Saturday morning and occasionally Monday night gripe sessions. And we didn't use the big book, and there wasn't a lot of recovery. There wasn't a lot of, there wasn't a lot of long-term abstinence. And I just sort of floated along, kind of miserable, not as miserable. I mean, I wasn't as miserable as I was before coming into program. And I really want to emphasize that, because I know the only thing that I have done 100% right is that I've never left. I came in and I never thought I'd get it. And everybody kept saying, oh, don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle happens. And I thought, y'all are a bunch of crazy, whatever. Like, I am so messed up. That's not going to happen. But I kept coming, and then COVID happened. And it was a blessing in disguise for me, because I became exposed to all these different people, right, all over the world, and the big book, found the big book, and and life started to change for me. And I got a little more willing. You know, and I do have to say that in all that time that I was in program struggling to get abstinent, that I learned a lot about relationships. I learned a lot. I mean, I started to get a lot of emotional recovery. I wasn't getting any spiritual recovery, which is why I wasn't getting a lot of physical recovery. But I learned a lot about being in relationships, which I needed to know, obviously. And, but then, and I became part of this, I live in Virginia in the United States, and I became part of this meeting that's based in New York City. And I went to that meeting for a couple years. And I mean, I still go to that meeting. And, I have a lot of great friends in that meeting. And one night I binged. The meeting started and I had my camera off and I was at my office at work. And I sat and binged. And I had a closed, I had my own door and like no one could see me. And I binged. And then halfway through the meeting, I turned on my camera. And then somebody who'd been in the meeting, and I'd only talked to her like once or twice, messaged me and she said, "Call me tomorrow." And so I called her the next day and we started talking and she became my sponsor. And I had the gift of desperation and I finally started doing everything that she told me to do. And it didn't make any freaking sense at all because what she wanted me to do, I'm like, I gotta lose weight. I gotta get healthy. I'm gonna die. My blood work's all over the place. Like I'm pre-diabetic. And she's like, "You gotta focus on the spiritual and then the emotional will come and then the physical, the recovery." Right. And I was like, "That's not gonna work. I gotta do this right now. Focus on the spiritual." I was like, "I don't know how to focus on the spiritual. I don't believe in God. This is all like, I'm a scientist. Like, this is not going to work for me." But I did. I did what she told me to do. I set my alarm every hour to pray. And at first those prayers were just like, you know, "Hi." It was really like every once I've like, you know, "Hi, God, it's me. Please help. Thanks." I mean, that's like all I could do. And I set my alarm and I prayed and I, eventually pulled up a chair for God. And there's a chair pulled up today right next to me. And I asked my higher power to sit with me before this meeting. And I put on my higher power cloak, you know, which she sent me this picture of Harry Potter putting on his, you know, his HP, his invisibility cloak. And so I always picture that. I put on my higher power cloak before this meeting. And I, you know, and I would look at the mountains and the sun and the ocean as a way to connect me with my higher power. And I did all of these things that were just, I mean, you know, talk about coming to scoff and remaining to pray. Like I was like, "This is done." And I would say to her, "This is stupid. Like, this is stupid. You want me to get in the car and like invite my higher power to sit down and put a seatbelt on? Like, I look like a friggin' idiot." She's like, just do it. And then I did it. And I just did it. I acted my way into right thinking. And I came to have a relationship with a higher power that I do not understand at all, but is now the bit that is the most important thing in my life is my higher power. And I know that I cannot be abstinent without my higher power. And I know that I don't get to have this big, beautiful life that I have and these amazing relationships that I have and this, my kids.
2 minutes.
Thanks, Sarah. Like these relationships I have with my kids. Oh my God. My son is almost 17 and my daughter is in college. And I just cannot, I'm so grateful for those relationships. And I would not have them because they would hate my guts. They wouldn't hate my guts, but they would not trust me and they would not want to be with me because I would still be trying to control the hell out of them. And I know for sure I wouldn't be married. And I, you know, the man I am married to is, God, I think he's the most patient man on the planet. Because I'm a lot. But I have all of this because of this program and I have, you know, and I'm running out of time. I have like 100 other things I want to say, but just one thing I do want to make sure I say is that, you know, the decision to start sponsoring when my sponsor told me that I needed to start sponsoring, I was like, "Yeah, I can't do that. I don't have anything. Like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I can't sponsor." And she said, "No, you need to sponsor. All right, fine." So I started sponsoring. And oh my God, that is, you know, I remember like sponsors telling me, you know, you help me more than I help you. And I was like, "That's dumb." But oh my God, my sponsees have absolutely just strengthened my recovery in ways that I could never have imagined and enriched my life in ways that I never could have imagined. And I feel like I had 12 more things to say, but I must be out of time. And so I'm just going to end it there and thank you and tell you just how very grateful I am for you all. I think this group pass.